Welcome to this very special episode of Behind the Sea. It is our first English one. So today's guest is Christian Hillebrand, and he is the CEO of Vantage Towers. Vantage is one of Europe's largest tower companies. They have 86,000 towers in 10 different markets. They are at about 1.1 billion in revenue, and Chris has been in the telecommunication industry for 25 years. And how he got into his first ever C-level role and everything about his story we'll find out in today's episode. One quote or one thing that he told me and that really kind of I kept in my mind is that he was always willing to go where the job is. So he always made that sacrifice. He always moved to the job that he thought at the moment was right for him. And I think that is something that you have to keep in mind if your goal is to get to the C-level. Very interesting career and very interesting challenges and tips from Chris. So let's go to this very special episode. Let's go with Chris Hillebrand, the CEO of Vantage Towers. Jede Woche spreche ich im Behind the Sea Podcast mit Top-Level-Managern und Managerinnen. Alle haben ein Problem. Sie kommen nicht an die richtigen Leute zur richtigen Zeit für ihre Herausforderungen im Geschäft. Egal ob für permanente Rollen oder interimistische Aufgaben, wie zum Beispiel M&A-Projekte, Systemeinführungen, Neuaufbau und Umbau von Abteilungen oder ganze Organisationstransformationen. Oftmals mangelt es an der richtigen Ressource oder eben Kompetenz. Wenn dich das aktuell auch herumtreibt, dann komm gerne auf mich zu. Wir können einmal unverbindlich zu dem Thema sprechen. Mehr Informationen findest du auch auf atreus.de. Ich freue mich auf deine Nachricht auf LinkedIn oder eben via Mail. Und jetzt zurück zum Podcast.
Behind the Sea, der Atreus-Podcast.
Ich bin Franz Kugelum, Direktor bei Atreus. Und im Behind the Sea-Podcast blicken wir gemeinsam hinter die C-Level-Bühne. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be here today. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for doing this and thanks for having me here in Düsseldorf. Really enjoyed it. You're actually pioneering Behind the Sea. You are the first English episode.
First English episode. Well, I'm very honored.
Okay, let's do this. So can you please introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us what you're currently doing?
Yes, here. I'm Christian Hillebrand. I am the CEO of Vantage Towers. I joined back in August of 2023, and I'm here leading the team that's responsible for powering Europe's sustainable digital transformation in the form of new towers and rooftops that we build on behalf of our customers here.
That sounds really interesting. Can you maybe talk a little bit more about Vantage Towers and what you're doing, what kind of lines of businesses, and for everybody out there who's not from the telecommunication industry?
That's easy to do. So first of all, Vantage Towers is a company. It's coming up on our fifth anniversary. We were originally a part of Vodafone, but were spun off, and subsequently 50% of the company was sold off to KKR and GIP, Global Infrastructure Partners, two very large American financial institutions. We have a portfolio today of approximately 86,000 towers across 10 markets. What a tower is if you can imagine using your cell phone and there's a radio in the cell phone, it has to somehow connect up to a network to be able to connect to other cell phones or to pull data down. These are the large lattice telecommunication structures that you see by the side of the roads or maybe on rooftops if you pay attention. I know my kids say that I constantly point out to them like, hey, look, there's a tower I built. But this is really the digital infrastructure that helps to power Europe's telecommunications and then particularly 5G and high-speed broadband wireless data. We have a lot of customers here. Obviously, Vodafone's an important customer, but Telefonica, Deutsche Telekom, Zegona in Spain, 4IG in Hungary. We typically will do business with all of the various MNOs or mobile network operators across Europe. We also work with third-party startup companies that are looking for the Internet of Things types of connections. Our infrastructure provides a landing spot for these antennas to power the digital networks.
Sounds great. So all the huge telcos are probably your customers. You said that. Are you building the towers as well, or are you just like or having them built and then leasing them out? Or what's exactly the business model?
Yeah, so good question. So in our business, we both build the infrastructure and then own it and lease it out. So if you can imagine, if you build one of these large telecommunication towers, say it's like a 50 or 70 meter tower, in the middle of the suburban areas or out on around highways. You will build the tower not just for your anchor tenant or primary person that's locating their antennas, but you will also build it for subsequent providers. And the benefit here is, as you look towards a future sustainable Europe, you don't want to have towers that are built by every single operator. This is what was done traditionally. But now individual structures that are co-locatable and will provide one location for multiple operators and IoT providers. This is the core of our business. The construction element has three elements. You have a leasing component where you go out and you find a new suitable location. You then work with the local regulatory and governmental entities that give you permission to build the tower.
Got it.
And then you physically construct it. So this is a big portion of what we do. Not every tower company does this. Some others just buy directly from the mobile network operator, but we actually do build our own towers. We own them, we maintain them, we rent them out for additional customers. This is our model.
Got it. Okay. So you can't buy them from you once they're done.
We don't typically sell, although you have seen some movement within the industry. Certain operators, Cellnex, which is a large competitor, has been in the process of selling some of their portfolio. But typically, the key here is that you try to build as many of these towers as you can profitably, and then you hold on to them because they're long-lived assets that have a recurring cash flow. So they're it's a niche part of the industry in that not everybody knows who we are and what we do. But we are a foundational element towards the telecommunication networks here across Europe.
Very cool. I love those companies. And I think it's actually pretty cool to have like a sort of a portrait of these companies, because now people, if they get outside, like your kids, they can, like, if they see one of your towers, they can point to it and say, I know who probably built it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So much like you can imagine bringing power out to the communities, to people's homes, they have these transmission towers that bring the power out. And then oftentimes here in Europe, at least, it's underground. In the US, these are typically overground poles. Mm-hmm. But this is literally the infrastructure that enables that. And so it tends to start to blend into the background, if you will. You won't mm-hmm. notice it unless you're looking for them. But once you start looking for them, you'll notice that they are ubiquitous, literally. You know, in a dense urban environment, say like downtown Dusseldorf here, you would have many hundreds of towers on rooftops that provide that service for the mobile network operators.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So I'm glad that we have someone from that industry, because now you can maybe tell me and our listeners a little bit more about the challenges that you have in your role, and maybe also you have in the power, on the tower company industry.
Sure. Well, starting with, you know, there's a lot of challenges that we face in the industry. Part of it is the fact that it's hard to find spaces, particularly in the dense urban core of the cities. There are a limited number of rooftops that exist in order for us to put our masts on these rooftops. We compete with other potential uses of the rooftops. You can imagine solar powers getting more and more popular. As landlords try to bring down the cost of energy to their tenants. You also have additional spectrum and capabilities of the 5G networks that are being deployed. And this really results in more equipment needing to go to the rooftops, where there's not always the space to be able to do that. So this is one challenge. I think another big challenge for us has been around some of the cost of tower construction and maintenance. In the run-up to the pandemic, we saw huge inflationary pressures within the industry. Mm-hmm. The cost of labor that it takes to build one of these towers, and again, you can imagine if you're building a tower, you have to dig a hole, you have to pour concrete, then you have to get the steel in place and erect it, and then put the equipment in place. The cost of this has dramatically increased across of Europe, and particularly here in Germany. We see cost as being a huge challenge. And then the maintenance cost. You wouldn't think these big, large steel structures would require a bunch of maintenance, but in reality, you're constantly going out, you're tightening up guide wires, you're tightening bolts on it, you're performing visual safety inspections and the like. This all requires both manpower and money in order to do that. So these have been some of the challenges that we've faced in the industry as a whole. Another one that you can see is the delivery of power to the towers themselves. If in the past, this has always been a slower process, the cost to extend the power out particularly in very rural areas, we call them white spaces, but areas where there is no coverage today, and companies like ours are building towers in these areas for our customers. Just the cost to bring the power out and the time that it takes to design and to actually construct the power and to bring it out can often be up to a year or longer. So this creates a huge challenge for us in the timeliness of what we deliver. The flip side of it is that there's also great opportunities in the industry as a whole. So one of the things that we've seen is just this endless increasing demand for high-speed data and 5G technology. And this is not only in the residential areas and the commercial areas, but also in areas like the transportation sector. You know, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but one of the things that I'm sure you've experienced riding the railways here is it has coverage, but it's not perfect. The Wi-Fi in the trains is okay, it's spotty, but your ability to place a call and not have that call drop, your ability to use a high-speed internet connection, say maybe to download a movie onto your iPad, is problematic at best. And so we see these as huge opportunities for us as a partner in the infrastructure ecosystem to be able to help fund and to build and operate these towers so that the MNOs can provide services to their customers. This is something that's great. Other areas that we see, I mentioned a second ago, these white spaces. So in these very rural areas today where the coverage is spotty, there are some obligations that the government, European governments, have placed on the operators to go ahead and expand coverage out to these areas. Again, because these are typically not very profitable sites, they tend to be very low traffic and serve just people driving through an area or very, very low population areas. This is a way that we can help in the ecosystem by help providing the funding and to build these shareable towers for our customers. This is something that has been a great opportunity for us. And in the end, like I said, insatiable demand for new data and new services means that we have this just great opportunity to respond for our customers and to get out ahead of that capacity requirements and having the towers ready for the networks as they expand.
All right. So you mentioned these areas where the coverage is spotty. This might be an easy question, but is it just a lack of towers?
It fundamentally, it comes down to a lack of towers and obviously the equipment that goes on those towers. It's a lack of availability for affordable power being brought out to these areas. Often a lack of fiber availability in these areas. Our customers have gotten very creative to provide microwave backhaul. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but basically a alternative to fiber is using the radio waves themselves to transmit from the base station back to the core network. These are all areas that are challenging. The financials I mentioned a second ago of building out these white spaces is not really favorable. And so at the end of the day, what our customers look for is not only a partner that can execute in this area, but one that can really help drive cost out of the business and make these, you know, negative ROI sites to become at least neutral ROI sites. And we see very heavy sharing across the mobile network operators in these areas.
Got it. So do you also have like a consulting or services part in your company?
We do, although I'd say again, primarily our business is to build and to own and maintain these towers. We do have a services component. Some customers have looked for us to be able to provide the site acquisition for additional space as they add equipment to the sites. We also provide the installation of the actual cellular equipment that goes on the towers themselves that are not part of what we own, but are part of what the mobile network operator owns. It's often more cost effective if, say, you're building a rooftop installation and you're having to close a street and hire a crane to lift the equipment up top, is to do both scopes of work at the same time. And therefore, we can offer value back to our customers. Services isn't the primary focus of our business, but we find more and more the customer demand is driving us to develop our services portfolio. One thing I didn't mention earlier is another adjacent business that we're starting to see some growth in is around in-building systems. So imagine airports, stadiums, railway stations. These are all very large public venues, which oftentimes the cellular signal has a hard time reaching inside to provide good voice coverage and high-speed data. We build things called DAS, or distributed antenna systems, whereby it's not just the infrastructure hardware, but actually the active components that allows the operator signals to go from the outside of the building and be distributed across the entire inside of the building. And this is an area where, again, operators recognize that they need to provide coverage. And we've done a number of these very large-scale enterprise installations, the net impact of which is that we end up actually operating a portion of the active network, which is a new set of services that we're starting to see some pickup in.
Got it. Thanks for sharing this. So you said like you have 86,000 towers in 10 markets. Can you provide a little bit more about the numbers, maybe like how many employees and maybe something about revenue?
Yeah. We're about 800 employees here at Vantage Towers. What I'm not including, we have a joint venture in the UK market. It's Cornerstone. I think they have roughly 200-300 employees over there. And then Inwit, which is a public company. It's an Italian tower company, of which we own a little bit, about a third of the actual ownership of that. They have, I think, again, somewhere in the neighborhood of 200-300 employees. So those aren't direct employees, but, mm-hmm. but are part of overall the group of which we have invested. In terms of revenues, I think if you would have looked at the last published results when we were a public company. Mm-hmm. We delisted about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. I think we're somewhere right around $1.1 billion mm-hmm. in revenues. So, I mean, this is a big business, again, by any standards, given how few employees and how large the revenues are. We are a very efficient and well-run company.
Very cool. Okay, I think we got like a grasp of what the industry is and what you're currently facing in your role. Can you maybe give us an inspiring anecdote or something from your journey currently?
Yeah, maybe just start off a little bit on the journey itself, because sure. Again, I'm not sure everyone would say, like, how does one become a CEO of a very large scale tower company here in Germany, particularly in American for that yeah. matter? So this for me has been a 30-year journey across telecom. I started off my career in the U.S. As a consultant, and then went to go work for the operators in the U.S., first with Verizon Wireless predecessor, and then also 14 years at T-Mobile U.S., so my ties to Germany goes back quite a ways. That was the first chapter of my career in telecom, and then that was followed up by 7 years that I spent in the OEM space. So OEMs are companies like Ericsson, the providers of the telecommunication equipment that the operators use. Companies like Nokia and Samsung are also in this area. I also spent a couple of years in Samsung doing some commercial work across their largest US-based customers for the connected devices of handsets and tablets and other devices. And then the last 6 years, I've been here in the tower industry, first for 4 years as a COO of a kind of a startup, a disruptive tower company in the U.S., and then the last close to 2 years now here at Vantage. And so for me, it's been a variety of roles over time, but always, you know, focused around engineering, deployment, operations, finance, HR, and in significant leadership positions. At the end of the day, for me, you know, this has been a long journey. This is my second stint here in Europe. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the actual, I tried to think of something that would kind of be clever telling you about my career rise, and I'm not sure that it's a great one, but one of the things I realized at a very young age, even before I entered the workforce, was that I love technology. I love gadgets. I was fortunate enough to live through the PC age, computer age, of seeing the migration from mini computers into PCs and then network PCs. I was probably one of the few people I know my age that had a job in my university years where I actually worked on supporting PCs and networking across the university campus that I attended. And I knew that I loved technology and that I wanted to go into it. And then I started seeing the introduction of cell phones and GSM and just the way it started transforming people's lives. And in a real life incident, I realized what gaps existed and what mm-hmm. I could do to play a role. And so as a young person, I spent a lot of time on trains going back and forth in the US, even though we don't have a rail system as extensive as what you have here in Europe, is this was the most convenient way to travel from my home down in Washington, D.C., up to my college roommates that lived in New York City, and then my undergraduate university, which was up in upstate New York. And I would take these trips, and what I would notice is that there was, at least initially, no connectivity whatsoever. But then phones came on, so some form of early cellular connectivity. But the coverage was terrible and spotty. You would drop calls to the point of where you couldn't have a contiguous conversation. And then the technology changed into full-blown mobile networks. And many of the network operators did a great job trying to cover those rail lines, but they never quite got the ubiquity of coverage or the high-speed data connection that they set out for. And the irony in life is that I still see those same challenges today. I was riding on a Deutsche Bahn train from Dusseldorf to Berlin recently. It was about a 5.5-hour trip. And what I noted was the same types of issues that I faced as a young man in university and in those post-university years is the exact same challenges that they're facing today here in Germany along the rail lines. Namely, that if you're trying to have a business call that's lasting more than 10 or 15 or 20 minutes, there's a high probability you may drop that call in a very important business call. Similarly, if you're in the midst of trying to have a FaceTime with your kid that lives in the US and you find that you are connected either through mobile service or even through the Wi-Fi, which is powered by the mobile services, is that it's not great and that you have lots of problems there. So for me, what I like about my career is that I've taken this love of technology, this desire to fix and make things better, particularly around transportation corridors, just because I'm an active traveler, into actually doing something about it. First, in the mobile network operator, designing and building networks for customers, and then now in the tower industry of actually building that infrastructure that allows those railways to be covered. And I'm really proud of, I'm not sure if you're aware, but we have this Ghent project where we're working with Deutsche Bahn, Telefonica, Ericsson, ourselves, and working to build out robust coverage along a test track here in Germany so that we can prove what this technology is actually capable of, how we can transform the experience by a customer from the mundane kind of poor customer experience that we're all used to from riding on trains to suddenly this rich and powerful experience where you can do your work while you're on the train. You can stay in touch with the ones that you love and care about the most in a way that's really transformative. So to me, this is something that's fantastic about taking a real life scenario and then applying an action to real life solutions that I can affect here as CEO Vantage.
Okay, very, very cool. I have one follow-up question to your journey, but first, do you have like an hypothesis when this will be possible, that we have like a very good connection, coverage is great, and we can work from the train or something?
You know, it's a great question, because I would tell you this. In general, the cost it's going to take in order to fix this as a problem is likely going to be to build a mast every kilometer along every railway, every major corridor here in Germany. So if you can think about this from terms of numbers, we're talking tens of thousands of these smaller, albeit they're not huge towers, smaller towers immediately adjacent to the railway tracks. And this will allow for not only for modernization of the German railway signaling platform, which we're in the process of upgrading, but also to provide that robust, you know, broadband type experience, always on type of wow experience that customers expect today. And so it's gonna take a long time not only to execute, but it's gonna require some funding here. Funding from us as an industry. We're very excited to do this as a tower industry. It will probably not just be Vantage, but it'll be many of the tower companies do this. And then honestly, probably some money either from the EU or from the German government in order to invest and say, this is a priority for us. We must cover these key transportation corridors, whether they be railways or roads, and invest, because without that investment, this will never come to pass. So I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful based on what I see and this great experiment that we've done in the Ghent test track. But now it needs to be scaled up, and we need to all kind of stand behind this and put the investment behind the network upgrades.
All right. Perfect. Thanks. So now the follow-up question from before. Your time at Ericsson, was that the first C-level role you had?
It was the first C-level role I had. I was running first in North America, the operations, and then later in Western and Central Europe, same role. That was my first C-level role. I'd been in a very senior role at T-Mobile. I think I was considered part of the top 40 or 50 leaders within the business. But Ericsson was when I finally made that leap into the C-suite.
Got it. And do you by chance know what point in time you realized that was a goal, or was that a goal for you at any point in time?
You know, it was, I have to say, I didn't necessarily set out on the journey saying that success would only be achieved by being in the C-suite or eventually becoming a CEO, but I always had that burning ambition and that desire to do more. What I realized was, even in a smaller role where I had the ability to really impact as a business leader, a senior manager or director of a market or vice president or senior vice president of a region, I was able to be more effective as I was able to take on larger and larger responsibilities. That combined with a real desire to go to struggling parts of the business and to raise my hand to find the challenging opportunities where I could really lend a hand in a turnaround.
Cool. That's a really cool explanation. So in order to be more effective and to achieve more, you need more responsibility. And that eventually leads to C-level roles, right?
Some people aren't ambitious. They're not wired that way. They're happy in what they're doing. And there's a lot of sacrifice that goes along with chasing that dream. But I will say this is once I got there and I broke through, it was the realization of all of my ambitions, but also the ability to apply everything that I'd learned across not only engineering operations, but across commercial, across HR, across finance. It was really when I started to have that holistic P&L responsibility that I think really my career took off.
Okay, very interesting. Now, the big question for this show. What are your tips and learnings for being a CEO, COO, or any kind of C-level role? Are there any personal tips, routines, habits, something like that you can share?
Yeah, I would tell you, and this worked for me, so this won't work for everyone. But as I look back on my career, particularly over the last 20 years and how I've been able to advance across organizations, two things that I really did that not a lot of my peers were willing to do. One is I was always willing to go to where the job was. And so that meant a number of relocations. I think I had six relocations across a 14-year career at T-Mobile. So you may aspire for a job. You may have all the skills to do that job, but there's no need for that job where you are sitting. And so this means being willing to sacrifice from a family and friendship and the comfort of living where you are and being willing to go and to take a risk and to go to where the opportunities actually are. And so this was something that very consistently, I would raise my hand and say, hey, I'm happy to go to this. You know, for me, it was I went from Austin, San Antonio to Dallas to New Jersey to San Francisco, back to New Jersey, all in the span of a very short time at T-Mobile. 14 years. But it's that willingness to go to where the job is was a big thing. The second thing is there are some people that like to play it safe. And what I mean by this is they only want to go into a great situation where everything is already working well, where they can ease into a role and take the baton and carry on into a high-performing organization. I would argue that the best way to supercharge your career and to advance quickly is to be willing to take those smart, calculated risks in life, which includes volunteering to go to very troubled situations or turnaround situations. I will tell you, as a leader, as I look at my talent within the organization and the people that I see being the next generation of senior leaders, future C-suite players here within our company and within other companies I've worked at, it's people that are willing to make that leap and to take on something that may seem very challenging or sometimes even hopeless with an effort towards turning it around. Because when you turn that around, when you finally get there, and you put in all the time, blood, sweat, and tears, if you have that expression, in terms of turning around a challenging situation, is it says not only a lot about your leadership capability, your style, but it shows that you're willing to take those types of risks, even if, you know, it may have a bad outcome. And at the end of the day, to me, these are two of the integral things that I think are really, really important for anybody that would aspire to move up is to have that in their DNA. I think the second thing, a couple other things, is about, you know, you got to be careful not to lose focus in a C-suite job. So there's this tendency always to be worried about today. And where am I versus my goals today? What do I need to do today to do my job? And that's clearly important. I'm not trying to dismiss that. But being able to take a step back and to look holistically, not just at today, but where you're heading towards tomorrow. What are the risks and opportunities that exist as you plan to go from your current state to your desired state? This is something that anybody that aspires for one of these types of role, they need to have a little bit of that field vision. I think of great football players that that can preternaturally pass to a player that's streaking down the field in order to score a goal. This is that big picture focus, which is really, really important. You know, embracing core values of a company. So one of the things that I find is principled leaders that tend to make decisions that are governed by the company values that exist, as an example, ours are art, accountability, respect, trust, and teamwork, your advantage. But leaders that are willing to think about the goals and the decisions that they make and how they align with company values and the fact that that would be replicated throughout the company ends up in better alignment and also better execution. So that your frontline employee or your frontline manager would make the same type of decision as a CEO. Why? Because they're aligned using the values as a prism by which they drive their decision-making. Mm-hmm. Hiring and delegating. I think, you know, talent wins in any business. You hear this a lot, but I'm a true believer. When you don't hire your top talent, when you make compromises on your team, you're doing a disservice not only to yourself, but to your company. Why? Because the cost to hire a new employee, to train them up and to put them in place is time and money and distraction if you don't get this right. And then the ability to delegate, leaders that don't try to do it all themselves, but set clear and concise goals, timing for measurements and the like, these typically are more successful leaders in time. That ability to empower people and hold them accountable is really, really integral to somebody sitting in my chair. And it's just a few of the things. I mean, I could go on for on and on, but to me, these are just a couple of things where I would say for your listeners, if they're willing to look at these things and embrace them, it can help them supercharge their career growth in the future.
Very good. Yeah, that was packed with information and with good insights. Thank you so much. Can you maybe give us a little bit of your daily routine? So is there anything that you do on a daily basis or weekly basis that helps you to drive success?
Yeah, I'm a person that's very, very note-taking oriented. I believe, and I take paper notes, I take e-notes on my iPhone and my iPad. I use the Microsoft suite for action items. The fact that you would take notes and then after a meeting that you have with somebody to then send out a follow-up to say, hey, this is what we talked about. This is what we agreed upon. Here's the deliverables. Here's when it's expected. Mm-hmm. And please, let's do these follow-up actions. To me, having that fastidious note-taking capability is really important. Secondly is I'm a big fan of communication. And therefore, you know, whether it's, you know, monthly all hands meetings we have across all of our employees, whether it's staff meetings, weekly staff meetings, where we spend a couple hours going through the business results and the actions that we're taking as a leadership team, whether they're individual one-on-ones with people that are my direct reports and oftentimes skip levels with my direct reports, whether it's like just the daily text to say, great job, Hazal, thanks for doing that project for me. Communication to me is absolutely critical. This is something that is a big part of my life. And what I do is communicate to people. And then third, I think on a personal basis, for me, it's a stressful job. The hours are long. Oftentimes working on weekends, nights and weekends is I'm a big believer, healthy body, healthy mind. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I try to get to the gym. I love to ride my bike along the Rhine here. It's beautiful in Dusseldorf. It's a great bike ride. I hear you can go all the way to Amsterdam if you keep pedaling long and hard enough. But to me, is getting some form of outdoor exercise where you're outside, fresh air, you spend time where you can reflect, clear your mind, think through the various issues of the day. This is absolutely and critically important to my mental and physical well-being.
Very nice. I think everyone who has been listening until this point is, satisfied. So there's lots of insights. Thank you so much. What would you do if you weren't allowed to be the CEO of Vantage Towers? So anything else outside business?
It's a tough answer to question answer, only because I always tell people that I work with here is, A, I feel very privileged to be here in this role, but I love my job. And it's hard for me to imagine anybody being able to lure me away because I enjoy what I do. It's not without its challenges day in, day out, but I really, truly love this company. I love our shareholders. I love our customers. I love our employees. And so it's hard for me to actually imagine myself doing something different. But if you force me to answer the question, look, I think it would be another role in technology. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I really love about working in this industry is not just the fact of we're this huge enabler for the digital 5G future of the industry, but it's actually working in technology. It's working in tools, and we're starting to see AI creep in into the decision-making process and analytics. I fully believe that I would be working somewhere in technology, maybe in one of the computer companies, maybe in one of the software companies, because I'm passionate about this, how do we change the world challenge that all of us face? And it energizes me to realize that I'm a part of something much bigger. And even though I might just be one person contributing, building that foundation, that technical foundation brick by brick, to me, it's a hugely exciting thing to do. So I'd definitely be working in technology. Mm-hmm. I think if I won the lottery or suddenly inherited, 10 million euros, I think I would look for charitable things. I love teaching people. Mm-hmm. I've been a part of several educational charities in the U.S. where we help to rebuild school recreation areas. I love coaching and mentoring people. Maybe there's a third or fourth chapter in my life after I eventually hang up my spurs and focus in on trying to help people in their career growth. And, to me, I find that very rewarding in a way of kind of paying back of what was done for me earlier in my career is providing that coaching and guidance to help people maximize their personal and professional growth. This is really important stuff to me.
Amazing. I think these 35 minutes have been such a thing. So there are lots of people listening who are also executives, also C-level managers, but there are also lots of people listening who want to become one someday, I think. So is there anything I forgot to ask, or is anything you want to mention?
No, I just say to individuals, don't give up your dreams. If you are ambitious enough to aspire to get to the C-level, you can do that. Yes, you have to be smart. Yes, you have to be a hard worker. Yes, you might have to get lucky to find that opportunity. But as somebody who spent, the better part of kind of, 8-10 years in the number two role in a couple different companies before I finally reached the CEO role, I would tell you it's not only possible, but you should go for it. I mean, the reward for people in getting to roles like this is that you can have a huge impact, not just on yourself, your personal professional growth, but more importantly, you can have a lot of impact on others, on people, on companies, on customers, on shareholders. And don't give up that dream and keep pressing, because literally anything is possible if you put your mind to it.
Perfect closing words. Chris, thanks for doing this.
Yep, you bet. My pleasure.
Awesome. So in case you are still with us, you probably enjoyed this episode, so please leave us a review. And also, you can get in contact with us. We have everything down in the show notes, so please reach out if you need an introduction to Chris. And if it's something of value, I guess I can do that. If not, please try it yourself. This podcast is only possible because it's presented and sponsored by Atrius. So please also check out atrius.de. And if you are currently in need of some great interim professionals, if you have any situation like M&A projects, post-merger integration, system integrations, or any leadership roles, please reach out. We can have a conversation. Sometimes that already helps, and I can find we can find a solution. And if not, we have a great talent pool of 20,000 interim managers, and we can look for the right person within there. Chris, looking forward to the next conversation.
Yes, thank you so much.